It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We just got out of the keynote, the WWDC keynote. We've brought in developers, experts, editorial writers, even Andy Yannatko, to find out what it all means. Meanwhile, I'm going to get online and try to buy one of these suckers. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 303, the WWDC keynote. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with clients and colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the promo code MacBreak. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, visit MacBreak.Hover.com and use the promo code MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, a very special edition right on the heels of the keynote address at the Worldwide Developers Conference for 2012. I'm Leo Laporte. Joining us, a stellar panel to analyze some very, very big announcements. I'll go left to right here, starting with Andy Yannatko of the Chicago Sun-Times, a regular on Mac Break Weekly. Great to see you once again.
Guten hello.
Gutenberg. Andy was great on Twit yesterday. It's really nice to have you on Twit.
Yeah, there's actually going to be like the Twit and Otko week. Going to be on yesterday, today, and then Wednesday, technically today, aren't I?
Wow, that's great. Well, we like having you on. It's
I like being on. It keeps me off the streets and off of the bath salts.
Also here from Big Nerd Ranch, which is back in Georgia, right?
That's correct.
That explains the cowboy hat because everybody in Georgia wears cowboy hats. Yeah, Aaron Hillegass is here. He's the author of a couple of really great books on developing in Cocoa. And Big Nerd Ranch is the place to go to learn Cocoa programming. Actually, not just Cocoa and iOS. You now do Android as well.
We do Android, we do iOS, and we do Cocoa.
Yeah.
We also do some web stuff, Ruby on Rails, Python, Django.
Yeah. If you were out here, we'd do a program. I really want to do a developer show. I really do.
We should do that. That'd be fun.
Yeah. What I want to do, and I think it'd be unique, is teach people to program.
Yeah,
a week at a time class. That'd be huge. Could follow along. We'll do it. And we'll figure out a way to work with Big Nerd Ranch.
So on this show, my claim to fame is I was actually at the keynote.
He was at the keynote, which ended, and he left early. How early?
I did a full hour of the keynote, and then I got in my car and drove up here at high speeds so that I could actually comment on it.
That is commitment.
I know a few things that you do not know because my body was actually there.
We're going to have the physical representation of the keynote in just a moment. But let me introduce our other panelists to my right. I very rarely see him anymore. Alex Lindsay is back in town. It's good
so
to have you.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, you must have planned it, right, so that you could buy one of these things.
I'm just really happy that I was. things sorted themselves out so that I could be here.
We're thrilled to have you. And finally, Chris Breen, who is also with us on our live coverage today from Macworld Magazine, the Mac Daddy, Mac 911 column. Hey, Chris, good to have you.
Thank you very much for keeping me on, Leo.
Yeah, no. We need all hands on deck because, as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the biggest keynotes we've seen in a long, long time with updates on iOS 6 and the newest OS 10 Mountain Lion, as expected. It is a developers conference, after all. But rarely at a developers conference will Apple announce new hardware, and they did, in fact, announce new hardware. No Mac Pros, no Mac Minis, no iMacs, no iPhones, but two new MacBook Pros and a very exciting Retina display MacBook Pro. So let's first start with you, Aaron, because I know you were there.
I was there. And here's what you do not know from the live blogs, and that is that Tim Cook was doing an incredible Steve Jobs imitation.
I was impressed. We saw a little bit of it in a pirated feed, but I was impressed. He was really playing on the heartstrings, too.
He did. Yeah. He talked very slowly. He would pause, and when he would become beklempt, he would do the namaste hands in front of his mouth.
That's stuff Steve like gesture. Steve.
It was exactly like Steve. He did the namaste.
Wow.
He paced it, and yeah. He used the same words. He had the black shirt and the blue jeans. The shoes were different. Jay's going his own way on the shoe thing, but overall, he was working really hard to be almost exactly like Steve Jobs.
He did not say one more thing. That is a trademark.
He did not say
one Jobs
more thing.
Steve would come back from the grave and sue his ass if he did. But he did say, what do you think? And I think that's the new tagline. Instead of one more thing, what do you think? I'm just saying. So what do you think?
All right. So in the community of developers, and I guess I'm sort of representing developers, we have a verb that the rest of the world does not have, which is Sherlocked. So Dan Wood had this tool called Watson.
Yes.
And it was very cool because it would go out over the web and it would get you flights and things also, and then it would reformat them.
Right.
And everyone loved it. And so the next time Apple did a version of OS X, they had Sherlock.
Right.
And Dan's business was gone.
Yeah, in fact, that was such a blatant case because Watson, Sherlock?
Watson and Sherlock.
You might as well spit in the guy's eye.
So I was sitting there, and I was sort of keeping track of everybody who had been Sherlocked in this show. So
it's a long list.
We saw iCloud sharing. And if you're Dropbox and you saw iCloud sharing, you'd think, right. Sherlocked.
With an API.
With an API.
Right now, almost every iOS app, if they want to have shared data, will write to Dropbox because Dropbox has an API. They couldn't write to iCloud previously. So that really, I think, sold a lot of copies of Dropbox, copies or subscriptions to Dropbox, because, you know, that was the way to do it. But now iCloud will have that same capability, basically.
Right, right. And then we had Read Later added to Safari. So the Instapaper people were immediately...
Marco Arment was in the Twitter, and he said a four-letter expletive. At first, I thought it was about that, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then he said, oh, no, this is what AT&T is saying. Because they got kind of Sherlocked, too, but we'll talk about that.
The iMessage?
And FaceTime on cellular.
FaceTime on cellular.
Yeah.
We had the Growl guys who have been doing notifications on OS X. Yeah. They were solidly Sherlocked. They have recently gone for profit, so they're on the App Store.
But I think they saw this coming. We've known iOS 6 would have notifications.
Right,
for some
time. So notification centers. The Google Maps guys, of course, were replaced with the Apple Maps. They were solidly Sherlock.
Solidly Sherlock.
I think that might have been the biggest Sherlock.
In fact, the Apple Maps almost feature to feature, in lockstep with Google Maps.
Exactly. Just what we saw last week from Google is now all in the Apple Maps, which is kind of amazing. And then it seems like every entrepreneur I knew is trying to do photo sharing.
Right.
And so sharing of photo streams sort of Sherlocked all of them in one huge.
This was also, though, something that Apple had to do because Mobile Me had galleries, and there was a way to share photos using Mobile Me. That's going to be turned off at the end of June.
Right.
So Apple, we kind of knew it would respond in some way. What does photo stream sharing mean? It means I can say to you, hey, Aaron, here's my photo stream. Would you like to see it? How selective?
No, you can actually select it on a picture-by-picture basis, and you can say, I'm going to share these five photos with Aaron and Andy.
Can I share them on a website or a gallery that I can then have a public URL?
I don't know the answer to that.
They haven't said that yet. Okay. That's what Mobile Me could do.
And one of the big things with that will be convenience. Again, you have a lot of people in the Apple environment, which means their Apple TV and their iPhone and their iPad, and they don't have to think about it, and they don't have to go to a website, and they can just see all those things just kind of feeding into their different devices.
Yeah. And it's cached. So if you were on the internet and while it's power napping, it's getting that data off the photo stream. When you get on the airplane, you open it up. You don't have to pay the $10 for the internet. You can see those photos that it downloaded for you overnight.
I am going to we're going to take a break. When we come back, what we haven't done is kind of given you a synopsis for those of you.
I'm sorry, I left right
for
in.
For some reason. Say again? We have Jason? Okay. We're going to do a complete rundown of everything we heard. But actually, before we do that, let's say hello to Jason Snell, editor-in-chief of Macworld Magazine, who did a great job live blogging. We were watching you carefully, Jason. There he is.
Typing, yes.
Yeah.
Hi, Leo. Great to be here.
So we just heard from Aaron Hillegass. Were developers very excited? It seemed like, from what we were hearing, big oohs and ahs for a lot of features.
Those guys are really excited about lots of stuff. They cheered about the fan being asymmetrical.
Yeah.
MacBook Pro. I mean, they're very excited. They did the old talk show trick where Tim Cook or Scott Forstall would mention a location, like, Korea. Yay! Listing off cities and countries.
I noticed China got a lot of applause. I think a lot of Chinese developers were in the audience.
Definitely.
Or
definitely.
Developers who wanted a piece of the Chinese market were in the audience. Could also have been that.
Oh, yeah. And having Siri and also all of those Chinese web services available is a big deal.
So what were your highlights? Again, you were in the room. You have probably a different perspective than those of us who are sitting outside on the curb.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm intrigued by what they've done with the MacBook Pro, having sort of updating the old one while introducing a new one. That's that's interesting. You know, Mountain Lion, we'd already seen a little bit of a preview of it before. There were only a few new features there. And the big story is all the stuff that they're adding to iOS 6. I mean, that's the biggest part of Apple's business. And so upgrading and enhancing it, presumably iOS 6 will be what runs when the new iPhone comes out. It'll come out with iOS 6. That's usually how they do it in the fall. So it's I think iOS 6 is just huge. The fact that they've got better Siri and they're bringing Siri to the iPad. And then they ticked off a lot of boxes of things that just didn't work quite right. Like, you know, the fact that Android had a huge lead with turn-by-turn directions built in, and they knocked that off. And fixing Notification Center so you can have access to some more stuff there, like Twitter and Facebook. Making a deal with Facebook, I think, is a big deal, because they were obviously kind of mad at Facebook last year over the whole ping thing. And they've made nice there, too. So, you know, iOS 6, if I had to pick, although I'm intrigued by this Retina MacBook Pro, because I suspect that it's the first in a long line of products that are going to have bring Retina displays to desktop computers. And I think that, you know, potentially, you know, this is the beginning of a process that leads to everybody just sort of expecting their desktop display to be high DPI.
Not one word about a new iPhone, but that doesn't surprise me, right? Or surprise you, right?
No, I think it's implied, right? I think its existence is sort of implied by the existence of iOS 6. That's the trick, is they get the developers revved up on iOS 6 now,
right?
And their apps all get updated and ready for iOS 6, and then the flagship product for iOS 6 will be a new iPhone in the fall. So you could only see the silhouette of it right now, but I mean, definitely that is going to be the flagship iOS 6 product.
But there were a couple of things in the silhouette that were interesting. So, for example, the Passbook.
Right.
Is perfect for when they add near-field communications,
right,
where you'll be able to say, this is my pass for that sort of a purchase or this account.
Passbook stores your airline tickets, your movie theater tickets, your loyalty cards like your Starbucks card. And right now you have to show that Passbook page, perhaps as a QR code. Mm-hmm. To a scanner. But wouldn't it be great if you could just tap your phone on some reader and it would say, okay.
Or be in the same, just in at Starbucks. I mean, I buy everything now when I walk into the Apple store with my iPhone without talking to anybody.
Right.
Which I still think is, every time I do it, I feel like I'm stealing. Like I feel like someone's going to catch me. And I don't feel like I'm stealing, but I just feel like this can't work.
I know. Square card case is just bizarre. It's like, put it on Leo and boom. Okay. Yeah. So, Jason, do you feel like there were any surprises?
I think the surprises are in the details. I mean, how they did Google Maps or maps without Google, un-Googled maps. Yeah. You know, it's all in those little details, right? I mean, they get the big picture, but you don't necessarily see. I think that their 3D view was a little more than we maybe would have anticipated. And the way that they do the turn-by-turn directions, it's all, you know, is there a single big surprise? It's hard for Apple to keep surprises. I think that there are little bits in iOS 6. They kept it with Mountain Lion, though, up until a few months ago. So. Right. You know, with a lot of Apple stuff these days, they can't keep the huge picture a secret, but they can dazzle you with the details. And that's definitely what they tried to do today.
Rate Tim Cook's performance.
Well, he was like the MC. He was like, the not even the host of the Oscars, although maybe that. I mean, he came in at the beginning and the end,
right.
And he was fine. He gave the big picture about what Apple's all about without getting into any of the details. And he let those to the individual performers. So he did a fine job. You know, I think we've all anticipated ever since Steve Jobs took a leave of absence way back when, that Tim Cook was not going to be doing the Steve Jobs part.
Right.
It's nice to see him have a role and, you know, be present on stage at the beginning and the end to sort of tie it all together. But we figured that Phil Schiller would be out there, and it's interesting to see that they've got Craig Federighi and they got Scott Forstall, and they're really trying to, you know, build these guys up as the faces of certain parts of Apple's product line. So Tim, you know, Tim was the ringmaster, and that's all he really needed to be.
Right. And, you know, this was the first event that Apple's done. I don't think you could say this about the new iPad event, which was the last event, that you really didn't feel the ghost of Steve Jobs hovering over it. Now, I wasn't in the room. Would you agree?
Well, there was an icy chill at one, but no. This is the modern Apple keynote approach, yep. which is keynote by committee.
Yep.
And, you know, a kickoff from Tim, and then you know you're going to see Phil, and you're probably going to see Forstall if there's iOS stuff, and Federighi now if you're going to see Mac stuff. And mm-hmm. that's okay. Those guys they did a pretty good job. They were certainly well-trained and well-rehearsed. And there were moments of humor from all of them, which I thought was a really good sign. Federighi had a couple of asides that were actually kind of hilarious. And so I like that, too, that a little personality. When he referred to AIM and other legacy messaging systems, and everybody tittered and thought that was hilarious, and he just shook his head and said, I had to say it, you know. It's all about iMessage. And he was honest and funny, and that was good.
Siri opened the conference, the keynote, with a couple of jabs at Android, which is something usually Apple doesn't do. That was the last we heard of Google and Android in the keynote, I think, yes?
No. Forstall made a point of suggesting that, you know, they've got this huge uptake on iOS 5 on their devices, and then contrasted that with the percentage, the 7% that are on Ice Cream Sandwich. So there was another jab at
And also that's an app's jab. That is an app's jab. And
customer
satisfaction. He said that it was below 50% for Android people and above 75% for Apple people.
Right.
Yeah, and he actually had RIM, Android, and Windows on that list of customer satisfaction. What they didn't do is mention it in Maps. They just, you know, they did a very Apple thing with the Maps, which is we have Maps. We made our own Maps. They're great.
Were there ever Maps on iOS before? We don't know. But now there are.
There was an app. I don't really remember.
I don't remember an app now. No, yeah. They didn't say anything like, we're killing Google Maps and replacing Google Maps. We've got a better... Nothing like that. It's just Maps. Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Jason, for joining us and giving us some sense of what it was like in the room and your update. I'm sure you're getting to work at Macworld with a bunch of stories. There's a lot to write.
Absolutely. We're going to have to put Chris Breen to work, too, and maybe even Andy and I.
Oh, you can steal him if you want.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Jason Stell, editor-in-chief.
Who, me?
Macworld Magazine. Chris, I think...
I already filed 2,200 words.
The boss is calling. Have you really?
Yeah, I had to write as I go because the Sun-Times wanted something up as soon as possible. So
sure.
You get to see exactly how many typos I made. I've already... The great thing about Twitter is that if you misspell Patty LuPone's name, Broadway veterans will say, it's P-A-T-T-I, not Y.
There's no Y in LuPone. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will go through one by one. It'll take us 2 hours. Everything they announced.
Slowly.
There was a lot. This was a jam-packed keynote, and I hope somebody took notes. We'll do that in just a bit. But before we do, let me talk about GoToMeeting, the great meeting online meeting service from our friends at Citrix with HD Faces now. We're talking in our coverage about Hangouts and FaceTime. I don't know if you've ever used HD Faces, but this is, I think, the best-looking video I've ever seen over the Internet. I don't know how GoToMeeting's doing it, but it's pretty impressive. And by the way, it works with the iPad, too. So if you want to host a meeting from your Mac or PC, you can. And now people can attend it on their iPhone. They can hear the audio. And if they're using an iPad, they can not only hear the audio, speak, watch your screens, watch your video. They can send their video using the iPad camera. It is really an amazing way to attend a meeting. This is completely transformational in the way we work together for collaboration, for training, for sales presentations. This is just the best way to go. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Visit the website, gotomeeting.com. The promo code is MacBreak on this. That's a 30-day free trial, and you'll get the HD faces as well. If you want to go to the website and look at the video, you'll really see, but I think you have to try it to realize how good it is. We did, in fact, a GoToMeeting meeting. I had 6 or 7 people all on iPads just as for fun in my office. It was amazing. It was really incredible. And because the iPad, you can hold the iPad, you can show people things. It's really, really great. And the video is crystal clear. Anything with a camera and internet access can attend a meeting, can join a meeting, and you can start meetings on your Mac or your PC desktops with GoToMeeting. For a 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com. Use the promo code MacBreak. And we thank him so much for supporting Mac Break Weekly. I guess what I could do, I didn't take notes, but But I can go down the list of Engadget articles. It will give me one by one. By the way, they didn't tell anybody, but they did. If you go to the store, which is now back up, they did announce, or not announce, but they did slip in new Mac Pros, not with Thunderbolt, but with slightly faster processors.
Which means nothing.
Yeah.
It's not even worth.
USB 3 either.
No USB 3. This is really pretty much saying, and not Ivy Bridge. Still Sandy Bridge.
It's mostly like, exactly. Yeah, we had a couple extra processors laying around, so here you go.
Wow. I mean, hardly enough.
This is exactly like when NBC was like extending Conan O'Brien's contract 1 month at a time.
Yeah.
Saying, like, we're not going to kill you, but clearly we're just keeping you along until we figure out what we're replacing you with.
You've got your head on the chopping block. The axe is poised, but we haven't actually dropped it yet. The 17-inch MacBook Pro did get axed. It is no longer in the list of laptops.
It's gone.
No 17-incher. So you might want to go to the used market. They did introduce a new smart
case. With the Retina display, I don't need it. I mean, the thing is that it's, I mean, this new Mac Pro is so,
right.
MacBook Pro is so right. much
it's
past
amazing.
The 17.
I know. I wonder how much longer for the iMac, too. Apple did introduce a new iPad smart case that covers both sides, $50, and still has that fold-up stand in the smart case. But here is the list of things they did announce at the keynote. Oh, my God. Get ready. Should I just run through it? As fast as I can,
because it's like start with one topic and then we can sort of gnash over that.
Refreshed. They started with laptops, which was kind of interesting. Threw us all. They said, and now first, new hardware. New MacBook Airs with the Ivy Bridge processor and USB 3. That's kind of a freebie that comes with Intel's new processor platform. New MacBook Pros with Ivy Bridge USB 3. A next-gen MacBook Pro with an amazing 2880 by 1800 Retina display that's double resolution in both axes, also USB 3, and interestingly, HDMI and dual Thunderbolt ports. This is a very high-end machine that it will have SSD, 256 gig SSD drive in it, 8 gigs of RAM, the starting price $2,199, much lower than any of us were predicting. It seems like a fairly aggressive price for that. Of course, not comparable with a PC or a Windows laptop, but still.
Yeah, but they're not comparable with what
they never
is,
have
is packed into this computer. I mean, this isn't. I've never
only
seen so
half,
much performance packed
it's
into
it. It's amazing. Only half a pound heavier than the MacBook Air. It's almost as thin as the MacBook Air, roughly twice the size of a USB port, you know, one on top of the other. This is an incredible device. They've got dual fans, dual asymmetric fans. The engineering on those is pretty cool. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And they've got now a new 720p FaceTime camera built into that. And a lot of battery. They claim 7 hours battery life. There's Diablo 3 on it. They say it's really good for Diablo 3. Obviously, they're doing a lot of that at one infinite loop.
And one of the interesting things is it's all SSD drives now.
SSD across the laptop. They will be updating their Pro apps, Final Cut Pro, Photoshop as well. They're working with Adobe. Autodesk they're working with as well. And Aperture will all be Retina. Now, they're going to do an interesting thing. Even though they did announce that Mountain Lion will be out next month sometime, they're going to ship all of these new MacBooks today. The new MacBook Pro with the Retina display will have updated apps from Apple, a new Safari, a new Mail, to take advantage of the Retina display.
And the advantage there, I think, is also that they're not... You're probably wondering, why does Photoshop need to be updated for Retina? It's to change the display size. So it says, I'm looking at a Retina display, and I'm not going to make you wear glasses.
Right.
You know, I'm going to make all those.
Otherwise,
it would
be too fine.
You wouldn't be able to read it.
Right.
Apple's actually been preparing for this for years. So for developers, every time you installed the developer tools, there was a thing called Quartz Debug, where you could change the resolution of your screen, and you could test your application to see how it would look if everything was doubled up.
Interesting.
And so we have actually been warned, and I would tell all my classes, you know, you should always check your applications on this because the pixels keep getting smaller,
right,
and the population keeps getting older. So
that's it. No, thank you. As an older population, I appreciate that. 220 pixels per inch, not as high a Retina display, say, as the iPhone, but if a screen is, you know, 15 inches away from you, 220 PPI is pretty darn good. They said 26 million copies of Lion had been sold. There are 66 million Mac users now, four times the number 5 years ago. Mountain Lion, let's talk about Mountain Lion a little bit. A bunch of new features, of course, a notification center. Dictation Siri will be on Mountain Lion as well as on the iPad.
Well, and I think the dictation is a big deal. I mean, it's
actually not full Siri. It'll be iPad style dictation on the Mountain Lion and full Siri on the iPad 3.
Right. But I think the dictation is a big deal. I've been using Dragon for 15 years, and it's just, it's really changes everything when you really start getting used to it.
Power Nap, a new feature that Notification Center works even when your Mac is asleep, your PowerBook is asleep. And when you open it up, all the things that happened while you were gone will be popping up on your screen. Safari much updated with a new unified search box. We knew this was coming, and thank God, because who liked having that Google separate Google box? Multi-device syncing, you can sync to your tabs and so forth. They briefly, in one line, mentioned a new Airport Express with dual-band Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. Lion, as I said, next month, $20 to update all your machines, and they will offer that $20 update for everybody all the way down to Snow Leopard. So this is a big push to get everybody to upgrade to Mountain Lion. And considering the new features in Mountain Lion, including iCloud, document syncing, Notification Center, this Power Nap, I think this is a pretty desirable upgrade at $20.
Doesn't it seem like Apple is getting users ready for the grand unification?
Yeah.
That is, we're starting to see all the features that are showing up on your iPad now showing up in OS X, and the platforms are on the user side looking more and more the same.
iOS,
but also the idea of having the Safari desktop synchronize itself across all devices too. The idea of walking away from your desktop machine and then opening up another iOS device, and there are all the tabs. This is the entire workspace you're working in Safari before. They really are trying to make the experience as seamless as possible. Also, weren't they really hammering that point home about how they really want to make it plain that the file system is not dead, but they want you to forget. They want to move it behind to the shed down back instead of giving it a big room off the first foyer. They made a demo after demo saying all your documents are in libraries. Stop thinking about folders. Start thinking about libraries. Libraries are where you keep documents, not folders. You understand me?
Get off the folders. They are iOS 6. They talked a little bit about that as well. 365 million iOS devices have been sold. 140 million iMessage users. They did push iMessage, which will also be on the desktop, as a unified messaging system. You'll be able to start a thread text messaging on your phone and then take it to the desktop and continue it. That will be, I think, much aided. That's been around on the beta of iMessage, but didn't work very well. I think it'll be much aided by the fact that now FaceTime is going to be integrated into iOS 6 using your cellular phone. Your cellular phone number will become part of your FaceTime identifier. That might help iMessage work as well.
Yes.
Because iMessage sometimes just leaves stuff out and seems to be confused about who you are.
Although I'm wondering what that's going to do with people's data plans if they get used to using cellular FaceTime.
Oh, boy.
And suddenly go, whoa, it's been a week. I mean, particularly if, you know, you look at the amount of time kids spend texting. So let's say a bunch of them jump to FaceTime instead and say, hey, how you doing?
I think 2 weeks go by. I think, though, that puts FaceTime on the map as an alternative. I'm surprised they got the carriers to agree to this. I'm sure that the carriers agreed because it's going to use cellular minutes or something.
Well, it's going to use data. Oh, exactly what Chris is talking about. I mean,
well, it might use minutes and data.
I bet you it's just data but it's enough. A lot of it. I
mean, data is enough.
If they jump you over your data cap.
Yeah. You know what? Now that they phased out unlimited data plans almost across the board, AT&T still stuck a little bit with it. Now, that's probably what the turning point was.
I think it might have been why they were all slowly turning them off, is Apple saying, here's the deal. We're only going to do this for a while, and then we're going to flip this on. You need to do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
Do you think this also indicates an LTE phone is coming up?
Ah, interesting. Sure would work a lot better with LTE than 3G or Edge.
That's what I'm thinking.
Interesting. Siri updated to put features back in that were on Siri when it was a third-party app, things like OpenTable booking. The ability to launch apps, that's huge, I think. Rotten Tomatoes reviews, Yelp reviews, sports scores. They really made a big deal about the sports scores. They must have done a deal with MLB or somebody for all of this.
It's actually a pain in the neck to try to find those quickly when you're...
Is it?
Like, I mean, it's not a pain in the neck, but you have to go find... You have to do a little search, and it is nice to just be able to just say...
Here's a weird search that Phil showed. Who is taller, LeBron or Kobe? And it did it. Said LeBron is slightly taller.
The really cool undertone is that if Apple's going after Google with replacing Maps, they're also really going after Google by replacing Search. They're really making the point home that Siri doesn't just translate your speech into a web search.
Right.
It tries to understand the sort of information you want. It tries to get that information from a source that Apple knows can handle that stuff well. And then it's going to reformat that information in such a way that's relevant to that kind of information. The fact that they are rolling out, they only had a couple different widgets, for lack of a better word, when they introduced Siri. There's one for stocks, there's one for weather. Now it really does seem as though every time there's a discrete piece of information that people are going to be searching a lot for, they're going to roll out a special Siri widget so that you will see an actual sports scoreboard. You will actually see a sort of a baseball card if you're looking for player stats. And I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg. If you ask, if in iOS 6.5, if you ask Siri, I've got onions, I got a bell pepper, and I've got 2 pounds of ground hamburger that are about to go bad. What can I make with it? It will actually give you 3 recipes and also format them not just as ASCII text, but as nice formatted recipe cards.
Pretty cool.
One of the things that most people don't think about, but us developers think a lot about it, is Siri is essentially a server-side technology.
Right.
And it's always getting smarter, just like Google Search is always getting smarter. And it's kind of hard to push that as like, hey, now it's release number 12. But I think they did a nice job by adding in some features like the sports scores. So they could say, oh, look at how much smarter it's gotten. And you can get that feeling like it's making progress. I think Google faces the same thing. Is they want to say, you know, we've made these incredible improvements on our search, but they have no way to say, hey, it's Google 12.
Right. It's inch by inch, yeah. not big jumps. Big global integration of Siri, too, now in Canada. In fact, many more nations, including China. Now, given the fact that Siri is server-side and seems to have been suffering, at least early on, some server-side troubles, not always responsive, I hope that they're able to accommodate a whole lot more users.
For sure. Adding all those users in Asia, and it's going to be huge.
It will not be available, this new Siri and iOS 6, on the older iPads. You'll have to have a new iPad to take advantage of the new Siri features.
Actually, not only that, but didn't they leave out the whole iPad 1 just for iOS 6 across the board?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Not that it couldn't handle it, because the iPad 2 is iPad 1.
Well, right? I mean, maybe it's just the speech. I was trying to figure out exactly what it was that was the deal breaker for the iPad 1. It might have been just the simple idea of all the horsepower that's required for text-to-speech, all the stuff that's required for Siri. And if Apple would be willing to simply say, oh, I'm sorry, Siri and text-to-speech should not work on the iPad 1, versus simply saying, nope, let's just have one consistent experience and just leave the first iPad owners out in the dust.
The according to Apple's site, iOS 6 is compatible with, interestingly, the 3GS, the 4, and the 4S.
That's the part that I don't understand. Is why does it work on the 3GS and not on the iPad 1?
Doesn't seem right.
Well, there's also no camera on the iPad 1, so you miss out on that kind of interactivity that you would get on the 2 and the 3.
I guess.
Yeah, but see, that would really disappoint me, because it's the same reason why I'm upset with like digital television, which tells you, nope, we're either going to give you the most perfectly digital, crystal clear picture, or we're not going to let you have ABC or NBC or CBS. Nope, all or nothing.
Yeah.
I would be upset if Apple said, well, you know what, it doesn't support Siri and it doesn't have a camera. We would much rather not let you have anything whatsoever in iOS 6 if we can't give you everything, and that's how we're looking out for you, the customer.
If Siri is truly server side,
really
what is it?
Poorly.
Huh? Chris?
It may be that it just runs really poorly on the iPad 1.
Right.
I go back now with iOS 5 on this thing, and it's pretty bad. So
but
I think
3GS is a
iOS
much
6
slower.
On there,
isn't the 3GS a much slower? But
3GS runs terribly too. I am surprised that they're putting it on there. I imagine that it's going to be like people who have the 3Gs and we're running iOS 5 or iOS 4, who are going, this is awful. This is a horrible experience. We want to go back to the previous version of the iOS, and we can't, so we're stuck.
Right.
So we're buying a new phone.
I think, look for those 3GS complaints when this ships.
Siri will be available only on iPhone 4S and iPad 3rd generation, requires internet access. Shared photos. If you go to the iOS 6 page, there's a lot of stuff on here. Some features may not be available in all countries or areas. Flyovers and turn-by-turn navigation only on the 4S and the iPad 2 or later. FaceTime over a cellular network requires iPhone 4 or later, iPad 2 or later with cellular capability. That's interesting. If you have an iPad 2 with 3G, now you can make FaceTime calls on the 3G. That's interesting.
Over your
data.
I still think that there's somewhere off in the distance at least somebody at Apple thinking about the fact that they could buy a carrier with cash. you know, yeah. Like, you know, it's like, you know, at some point in time you just close the circle all the way.
Yeah.
you know, all the way down.
Well, they're making so much money for the carriers with this sort of thing.
I'm just saying, you just think about what would happen if you were just taking all of that. Like if you were, you know, now I think Apple had would be reticent to do that immediately, but I wouldn't be surprised when you look at them rebuilding all maps from scratch and all the stuff. They have to be looking at all the money that the carriers are taking in on all of this stuff and the fact that it still isn't what they want to provide. You know, it's not, you know, it's not the perfect experience from Apple's perspective. You just wonder, you know, with that much cash on hand, you really could just go, you know, we could just buy AT&T, like write a check.
Right.
And buy, not right. not quite AT&T yet, but they're not far.
Right. Matt, let's talk about Maps. Maps now has turn ads. First of all, Google Maps are no longer built into the operating system. They didn't say whether you could still get Google Maps in the App Store. I presume you would be able to. But the operating system will come with a new Apple Maps application, which has, according to this, an identical... Is that not the identical icon as the Google Maps?
Slightly different, but only slightly.
Oh, only slightly. Now you're taking a right turn or left turn, whereas before you were just there on 280. It's still one infinite loop.
And, but I think it wasn't... This wasn't this map wasn't owned by Google, though. This is something Apple put in.
That was an Apple icon.
Apple... using Google Maps, but I don't think that they... It's
wasn't
not like,
this a Google app, though?
It is, but I don't think that... But Apple made the icon. They shipped it with the computer. Right. I don't think that it's... Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like the same thing. The big difference, of course, is that now instead of just simply showing you a map point for the Apple campus, it's actually showing you a turn-by-turn direction endpoint.
Right.
To me, turn-by-turn was like copy and paste. Everybody knew it should be there,
right.
And Apple really took the time to do a good job. And the way they integrated it with Yelp, and Siri to be able to say, you know, now you know where I'm going. Where can I get some gas along that route?
Right.
That's a huge step over anything else.
And some interesting things, for instance, a pop-up that says faster route available due to traffic. We could reroute you. Would you like to? And you could say reroute. These are nice features.
And then it's crowdsourced data about the traffic. They must be tracking the phones and seeing how quick your phone is moving through traffic.
Of course, anonymously.
Yeah,
but let's also make sure we give credit where credit is due. This isn't like a fantastic new feature that the hand of man hasn't had their hands on before. Maps and navigation has always been a huge limitation of iOS versus Android, where every Android phone comes with absolutely kick butt navigation, including speech to navigate. So I'm looking forward to burning a lot of gas and killing a lot of birds over the next 2 or 3 days, trying to figure out exactly how well this works compared to a similar modern Android phone.
That was a joke. Andy will actually not be killing any birds.
Only incidentally, only with my carbon off-gassing through a very, very old car.
No animals were hurt in the production of this MacBreak Weekly.
But I think for a long time, I think that at this point, just like phones, cameras, small cameras are facing extinction. I think that, this is pretty much the end of GPS, those remote GPS units.
I feel
units.
Bad for... There's another Sherlock device.
Yes. Yeah,
especially device. Because they're going to add, just like Google announced on Wednesday, Apple also has a small air force of planes flying over major metropolitan areas doing 3D mapping.
Dogfight.
I could just see the Google and Apple planes getting in a little bit of tiff. I hope they're not armed as they fly over.
It's quite a process to do this.
Well, now, let's ask you, because I think you probably know more about this than most, Alex. Is it just kind of like Street View, where you just fly over with a special camera?
Well, Street View is only capturing 2D imagery. So with Street View, what they're doing is they have, I believe it's 6 cameras that are, they're basically looking at every different direction, and then they've calibrated the cameras. The cameras are calibrated together, so they know exactly where one should end and the other one begins, and then that's seamlessly being stitched from camera to camera. And that's a pretty straightforward process. Typically, the 3D technology that we're looking at here is what we call photogrammetry, and what that is that we look at, if you look at an object from 2 or 3 different points, and you can identify points on that object that are the same in all 3 cameras, like I know that this piece of detail, it's usually just the tip of something or some detail, but I know that this is there, these match up, I then can triangulate where all those cameras are down to millimeters, and then I can map all the other points, from that piece. And if you get enough points, and again, this
that's
one,
the
two,
question, how often do you have to... You fly back and forth.
It's actually probably circular. So most likely, what you would do is a series of what I would do if I were doing it would be a series of circles that move, because you're trying to get around every, because there's certain things that you really have to do. You have to get all the buildings from different angles and typically different altitudes, and then you also need to know where they cut off and where the other buildings begin. And what's important there is the parallax between the, it's actually really important to look at the points, the parallax between the buildings. This was stuff that we used to do by hand in the mid 90s. And now if you get like that 1-2-3D catch, which I think I recommended a couple weeks ago, that gives you a really good example of what they're doing on a server level.
Got it.
If you want to see how that works and how well it works, that's, you know, the Autodesk
works really well. It's very cool.
So that's basically 1-2-3D catch is basically a micro version of probably something that's very similar to what these guys are using to
you know,
map it.
The way I did it with Sarah Lane on iPad today, and all I did was take about, I don't know, 10, 15 pictures going around her. And can you catch that over my shoulder? And it gives you kind of a 3D model. This took less than a minute.
And this is a free application.
I remember you doing this with me in the studio. You had to put a dots on my face.
Yeah.
You actually were drawing on my face with magic marker. And then when you don't
Come off for days.
No. And then look, you can look inside her.
That's what it looks like from her point of view.
Inside her head. This is
the
same
better
technology
than what I did. Yeah. In fact, this 1-2-3D catch is actually the same software that I used on you years ago. This is just a much more refined version of that.
It's pretty stunning what you can do.
Yeah.
All right, so the ability to see what it would look like flying over a city is cool, but is it actually useful?
I think it is, because I think
that
one of the things
is orientating
yourself.
That's a good question. I mean, we've had this in Google Earth for a long time, right?
Yeah, and I think it's been useful there, too. The more realistic it is, what I find is it's easier for me to orientate myself in a city as to what I'm actually supposed to be looking for.
Right.
You know, I'm supposed to be looking for that building or that piece, and if I'm trying to figure, or if I'm trying to figure out where I want to go, being able to actually, the more realistic it is, and for people like me, it's really important when we're prevising. You know, like we're trying to figure out, okay, we're going to put the camera over here, or we're going to do some event, or we're going to plan something. It's much better if I know exactly what it looks like. And with Street View, for instance, what's really important, which the Apple doesn't have, is the ability to know if it's still there or if it's really there. Like, you see a Starbucks there, but you don't know if it's really there until you open up Street View and look at it.
Yeah, I mean, do you think they'll do Street View in the Apple Maps in version 2?
I don't know. I think that Apple may, you know, because I think that Bing has kind of gone to a 3D modeling approach, and I think Apple may do that as well, where it's not a 2D. I think 2D is what, I think that was a great start, and Google did a great job, and I think they're kind of bound into that. But I think the next generation of this is to do more photogrammetry that's more detailed at the street level. So some kind of street view.
But a 3D
Like more of the technology that you're seeing here, because this is the next generation. When they started Street View, doing what they're doing now was not really possible.
Right.
Well, I certainly hope that they bring this out of cities and into suburbs and rural areas as well, because look, a 3D view of a city may not help me that much because, you know, it's just nothing but large buildings. I go, well, is that the large building I'm looking for? Because I can't see down into the cracks of the streets. But if I'm in an urban suburban area or I'm in a rural area, it's, oh, yeah, there's that oak tree or there's the guy over there by the hydrant and he's still there. And so I can use that to find out where I am. So I think in...
one of the
I hope initially this is really kind of a widespread sample instead of just, here are the major cities and take a look around.
One of the things I think is important is eventually some kind of API or something that people can actually feed. You know, we're talking about crowdsourcing, but being able to feed some of that data back in. One of the great things about Google SketchUp, well, it's not Google SketchUp anymore, just SketchUp, was that it was totally integrated with Google Earth. And so you could literally be in Google Earth and say, send this to SketchUp, and it would send the 2D representation of that building, the satellite imagery, and then you could build a 3D model of your building. So if you're an owner in Harare, Zimbabwe, or whatever, you could have your building built and then reinserted back into Google Sketch or into Google Earth. Mm-hmm. And people could choose to turn those on if they're in Google Earth. And so... it is important because Apple's not going to be able to cover the whole world effectively. I mean, this is going to take decades, you know, for them to do it themselves. There's got to be a way. I think it's really important for them to think about a way that municipalities that want their city covered next, you know, for tourism purposes, for e-commerce purposes, they might want to invest in their city being covered before Apple might get to it.
In terms of tourism, I think this Yelp integration is huge because when I'm traveling, I'd much rather stop at a local restaurant with some character than at a Chili's. Mm-hmm. And it gives you the ability to really easily say, where can I stop for a decent meal on this next
hour? Chat room made the same point when they're searching for apartments you could, or a hotel to stay at.
Right.
You can get a look at what that looks like. I think that's very valuable. But there's a big barrier to entry. Google's been driving these Street View cars around for years.
Right.
And they have a lot of them.
Well, so. I think that Apple, in a nod to Google, is using unmanned drones which is working out pretty well, except in Pakistan, it's impossible to map anything.
Keep on getting shot down.
Or they can when you're shot down.
They also announced Facebook, speaking of privacy concerns, Facebook and Twitter, not only in iOS, but also on Mountain Lion. You'll be able to tweet anywhere, anytime, and I presume they didn't show it, but Facebook integration would also be there. Facebook will be very much part of iOS. You can share a photo to Facebook from the Apple camera or from Photos directly. You can post your location from Maps directly. You can brag about your high score from Game Center directly. All of this. So obviously a little kiss and make up between Facebook and Apple. Tim Cook kind of promised that at All Things D. He said, stay tuned, and well, now we see. You can even have Siri post both to Facebook and Twitter if you want. Siri, do a Facebook update, and she will.
And also, poor Ping. Now you can actually make iTunes Store recommendations off of through Facebook, like your App Store recommendations and everything.
Yes, you'll be able to like Ping. Apps in the App Store on Facebook. It's smart for Apple to do this. I think it's a good idea. I don't see any reason. But it is an advantage because Google cannot and will not do this. They won't partner with anybody but Google Plus, and I think that's a big differentiator. People want to use Facebook and Twitter, and having those signals built in is huge.
Absolutely.
When contacts update an email address or phone number on Facebook, it'll update it in your contacts. These are the kinds of things I think real people really, really want.
Yeah.
Well, and I had to wonder how much of this was Steve versus Tim. That when Steve talked about Facebook and Ping, he talked about Facebook's onerous terms, which is, you know, not a way to further a business relationship.
Right.
And it may be that when Tim came back or came on board, he said, okay, you know, new day, let's start over and see what we can build. And clearly something has come from it.
Also, big app that we had heard rumored, Passbook. And as you mentioned, this is a very interesting app, more for what it says about what Apple's planning in the future than what it's doing right now. Right now, you put your airplane boarding passes, your movie tickets, your retail coupons, your loyalty cards in your Passbook, and then the QR code or barcode lets you check in. But if you add NFC and perhaps add a wallet and credit cards to this, suddenly Apple controls a lot of commerce.
That's exactly right. This is the infrastructure for a major play.
And again, I don't think you need NFC. I think that, you know, if
just the Apple ID is good enough for payments and pretty much wherever we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the tip of a very, very big
Square doesn't have an NFC. It just says, here I am.
Well, again, you walk into the Apple store, you log on to the Apple network.
Right.
It knows who I am because it knows that I'm Alex Lindsay at whatever. And so I go up to a box, I turn it around and I say in my Apple store app and I buy something and I just walk out of the store.
Right.
I don't even talk to anybody. I just literally just buy something and walk out of the store. And it knows all of those pieces. And I believe that one of the things about the Apple store is I think it's this research project for Apple to redefine how people buy stuff at your store.
Just think of all the data they're getting. I mean, oh my God. Huge.
Also, it's always so easy to see where Apple wants to move when you're using an iPhone or an iPad and something is clumsy.
Right.
And the last time that I was on my way home from the airport, I was taking my last leg of the trip home via Amtrak. I had to buy my ticket. I could buy my tickets via the Amtrak app through a credit card and then had to go pick them up manually. You just look at, oh man, how streamlined would this be if I could just use my Apple ID to authorize the payment and then my ticket just simply appears in this app that a kiosk or conductor is set up to be able to recognize. So yeah, that's we're going to see much, much more from this.
Now I'd imagine that the merchant has to write some sort of support for the Passbook.
Yeah. Well, there is an API, right?
There's an API.
So if you are Target and you have an app or you're Fandango and you do have an app, would be just a natural to say, oh, yeah, we'll just store your tickets in your Passbook. And
I think it's very hard for a retailer not to want to do this because as a brick and mortar retail, what you're competing against is Amazon. You know, the fact that it's really easy for me to go and just do that, and you got to make that buying experience as easy as possible. And if I know that I can just walk in without a credit card, without having to think about, you know, all of those things and just walk in and buy it with my iPhone, I would do that all over the world. You know, and I would just, you know, not bother to.
Well, and think of the convenience. You walk, you drive to SFO. It knows you've got a flight today. It pops up on your lock screen. here's your ticket, sir.
I mean, not only that, but your gate has changed, or your flight has been delayed by 30 minutes.
That's huge. Pretty hot. So if you're TripIt, if you're any of the flight tracking applications, if you're United Airlines, you better work with this. You better work with this. And what does Apple get out of it? Oh, my God, the data they get. And eventually, they've already got your Apple ID and a credit card.
And some small percentage, of course.
They're going to get a little vig on the transaction.
Well, I mean, and this is the beginning. I mean, this is, of course, the tip of the iceberg. What if you go to the SFO and every store you walk into when you buy lunch, you just use your iPhone. And any other little gadget items that you want to get on the car, you use your iPhone. And you have all these iPhone users that, like me, would never pull my credit card out again if I was able to buy stuff. You know, and then you would start picking stores because, oh, it's easy because I can just do it with my iPhone. I'm not going to go there. I have to pull out my credit card. I have to pay it cash.
And then also in terms of customer retention. I mean, once you have all that stuff on your iPhone, you're never going to go to Android, right?
Right.
Right.
Yep. It's called lock-in. And Apple's the best in the world at lock-in. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Great panel talking about the big keynote, two-hour keynote. Can we talk about it in less than a two-hour show? I don't know. Andy Iannacco's here from the Chicago Sun-Times from Big Nerd Ranch. Aaron Hillegas, are you going to do you redesign your classes and stuff when you start to see that? I mean, you've got to find out about these API.
All the new APIs we have to address in our courses. So we'll go through and figure out. Yeah. You know, we have two courses. We have the introductory iOS class, and then we have the advanced. And so a lot of these will end up in the advanced class instead.
Sure. Alex Lindsay also here. Have you purchased? You're sitting on that.
Oh, no, I already bought it. I'm looking at buying another one. I need a little one. No, for somebody else, we want to test them because we might have to buy. We have these remote kits that we do.
See, I think the fact that they're thin and light and still have this kind of resolution and power.
Well, the big thing for us is being able to hook. USB 3 means that we can now integrate HD cameras into every USB 3 slot, as well as having the HDMI outs and the Thunderbolt means that I can hook a bunch of cameras into it. We have a lot of remote kits.
They've got dual Thunderbolt and dual USB 3 too.
That's pretty hot.
That's a lot of connectivity.
Yeah.
In a very thin package. Also, Chris Breen is here from MacWorld.com. He's the Mac Daddy. And Hair of Breen and Body of Breen are both on Twitter, but he only does one. You figure out which one.
No, I'm just the body.
Hair has a life of its own. Our show today brought to you
indeed.
By our friends at Hover.com, the domain registrar you want to use, period. That's all you have to remember, Hover. People ask me, hey, Leo, what's the name of that domain registrar you recommend? I don't know why it's so hard to remember. Think of a little hummingbird hovering over your head saying, register my domain now. If you go to macbreak.hover.com, you'll save 10% on your domain registration. They offer all the big TLDs like .com, .net, but also .co, .ca, .org, .it, .asia, .es, .us, .de, even some of the new ones, .pro.
It is so nice. I have to say,
I want a .macpro.
I don't even consider anything
XXX.
Else. It's such a nice...
Great service, too. 24, you know, if you call during regular business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, they will not put you on hold. And that's something I can't say the other guy does not do. I have lived on hold with the other guy. And if you use the offer code MacBreak, you're going to get 10% off your new domain. If you want to move your domains over, it's really worth doing that. In fact, they don't say this in the ad anymore, but I think it's really true. See at the top there, 866-731-6556. You can call that and say, hey, Leo said you'd help me move my domains over for free. Normally they charge $25 for that concierge service. I think they'll throw that in. And you can move all your domains over. It's $10 to move a domain, but you get an additional year. So it's a really good deal. And by the way, privacy, who is privacy, is built in. There's no upsells. It's just very straightforward. So just try to remember this because, you know, yeah, I understand. You're not registering a domain right now. I want a Mac Pro. I know. I want a Mac.pro.
Yes.
Update our Mac.pro. Look at all those domains. Hover.com. Go to MacBreak.Hover.com to find out more. And don't forget to use the promo code MacBreak when you buy to save 10%. From the great folks at...
Hover is definitely the Mac of domain registration.
They are. They're clean, simple, user interface focused, support focused. That's a good way to put it. It's probably why they advertise on MacBreak, because they know you're quality people.
And it's less expensive. And, well, a little bit. I mean, it's really nice.
We're talking about all... Thank you, Hover, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. We're talking about all the new stuff We're not even close to done, you know. There's a new feature on the phone. This is straight from Android. Send to voicemail. Yeah, when somebody calls.
This has got to be my favorite collection of life-changing features. They finally updated the phone app for people like me who just do never want to be bothered by phone calls.
Don't call me.
If a phone call comes in, you can, instead of just simply dumping the call, you can also tap a button and have an automatic response sent out. You now have better granularity on who gets access to your ringtone. So you can just simply say, look, if the caller is inside my address book, let the call go through. If he's not inside my address book, don't bother me.
Or as they're ringing, you can reply with a message, decline it, and remind me later. But custom messages as well as canned messages. And they can even have location-based reminders to call back. So remind me in an hour when I leave, when I get home, or when I get to work to call this person
back.
That's
really good for me because if I don't see someone, I completely move on and I forget that they ever called.
They are like us, obviously. There's do not disturb. Mm-hmm. And you can even say, hey, do not disturb except for my boss. So you can even make, you know, if they're in my VIP list, for instance, they can disturb me.
I think the VIP list is so key. It's just That's because awesome. I hate, just in case you're wondering, I hate being called on the phone. And so it really has to be someone that I need to talk to want to pick it up.
Right, right. So if your kids call, you know, they can get through, but nobody else can. You can set up a schedule for do not disturb so it's automatically every night or whatever. You have quiet time. I like the reminders, and the location-based reminders have always been a nice feature of Siri and reminders, but now it's in the phone app, too, which is...
just really rough on the battery.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Anytime I do a location-based one, I know that my battery is just going to go toast.
Because it's always checking. Yeah, Where am I? Where am I now?
And that's true. The power nap feature, I was wondering how much battery life that's going to take if your laptop is downloading photos and backing up while it's supposed to be sleeping.
You're supposed to be sleeping. Take a nap.
Take a nap.
Mail has been improved.
It does updates, too.
Yes, it does. It does the software update automatically.
And I am a little leery of that because there are certain apps that I want to be updated and other ones I don't. Because maybe
I'm sure you could turn
to comply with some sort of Apple regulation, they've had to pull a feature out, and I don't want to update because I want to keep that feature.
Right.
I hope that there's an option just to say, no, don't grab stuff automatically. I'll pick it up myself.
This VIP list is cool too, for not just for phone but for email. You have, it's kind of like priority mail on Gmail. You have a VIP inbox that when messages come from mom or your boss or your kids or whatever, they automatically go to the VIP inbox. It's easier to add photos and videos to mail messages. Apparently, we mentioned Safari. Huge changes there, all over the place. I can't even go. Yeah, this has been a big, big update on iOS 6. It's funny because I thought this was going to be incremental. A lot of people were saying, oh, this is going to be a minor update. Aaron, how does this rank with iOS 5? Was huge.
iOS 5 was huge. This in my mind, is largely incremental. A lot of these features that you're talking about are nice, but not earth-changing.
How about this one for accessibility? They really focused on the fact that autistic kids have really gotten great results using iPads for communication devices. And now in the accessibility features, you're going to have guided access where you can say only this part of the screen can they touch. Mm-hmm. And they can't exit this app. Not just good for autistic kids, but for all kids, for toddlers.
So the number one thing, until my kids got to a certain age,
you couldn't let them.
They would constantly hit the home button
and
drop out of the, you know, they because that's the one thing they could see. Okay, hit the home button. Okay,
push it.
Now they'd be frustrated.
Well, then they would group. They would figure out how to hold down and group all your apps randomly all over your iPad.
So I think guided access is going to be nice for everybody who's got kids.
Yeah, it was great to talk about autism, but it's just anybody with a toddler.
Or employees with short attention spans.
do that to my employees.
Did you see that? Go ahead.
That was kind of the one blip. I mean, getting outside of the content and talk about presentation, that was the one area in any Apple keynote in any memory that I've had where I didn't really understand what the product was for, what its main features were, or who it's being aimed at. It just seemed a little bit scattershot. But of course, I wasn't actually present. But that's the first time that even like watching something via a live blog, I couldn't really grasp. It's usually so well honed, every single message they sent, that here is what it is, here's why it's important, here's why it's awesome, boom, next. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I think the autism references, while they're they're good. I think they were a little bit of a distraction. I mean, it's an amazing thing to make that available, and I think that it's been so successful in that community that it's really clear about why they included it. But I think it also distracted from all the other things that that is going to be available for. And they touched on it a little bit. For instance, using iPads for testing. You know, once you can now lock it there so that the students can't go anywhere to check their work. Right. That is going to be
that's big
massive.
For schools,
when you start looking at stuff like that combined with iBooks. You know, there's this Trojan horse that Apple, I mean, this kind of building thing where Apple really has the opportunity to reform education.
And the conference was for developers. And when you see that, you think, hey, now I can start doing kiosks with iPads, which is very exciting.
Speak for yourself, Aaron.
Also, you know, cash point of sale systems is also going to benefit from that.
Yep. Well, it just means one more place the iPad. I mean, it's already ubiquitous. It's just one more thing you can do with the iPad.
When you think about kiosks, I mean, really think about going to a retail store and going into the, you know, let's say a big box store and walking up to all those TVs and having a little iPad sitting there and being able to go, having like a little iBook that tells you about what you should be thinking about when you're buying a TV with cool little videos and 3D and explaining like this is what resolution means, this is what 1080p means. And so, you know, and having that in each section of that store would be, you know, really compelling for a lot of these brick and mortars.
Is Mountain Lion going to save iCloud? iCloud has really been kind of a mishmash. Talk about not really being clear what the message is or who it's for. iCloud has really been a little bit of a mishmash. Do you think, Aaron, that they have a more coherent story now with Mountain Lion?
I think they're getting there. I agree. When it came out, it was very much a
mishmash. What does it do? What do you get?
Gradually adding capabilities. They're integrating it in more with the standard apps. I think it's looking more and more like what they wanted it to be.
Well, you mentioned an API like Dropbox as an API. That's going to help on the iOS side for sure.
Well, I think what Apple is really pushing you now is these smaller hard drives with the cloud sharing files between all your different devices. Whatever you're holding in your lap right now is just a cache of what you work on, whereas your hard drive is now on the cloud.
So that makes sense because these new laptops, for instance, are all much smaller hard drives because
the SSD, they're much smaller. Yeah. But that's going to be okay is what Apple is telling you because that's not your hard drive anymore.
It's ironic.
It's just your local cache. So
you said, how are you going to be able to live with 256 gigabytes? That's massive, really.
So it depends on how well it works. I mean, this is a big gamble that I think that Apple's taking for the next couple of years. Is everybody really ready to trust a system like iCloud? And can they really just pull off iCloud so successfully that I won't have to worry about having manual oversight on where my files are? That's really the difference for me. Can I absolutely, if I put something on Dropbox, I absolutely count on being able to access that file later on. Part of it, I think, is just psychological. The fact that I can physically save it into a folder or copy it into a folder. And, you know, I grew up with the idea of files living in folders and living on servers. But the first time that I think that a presentation has been synced via iCloud, but then my iPad can't find it or can't download it, that's the last time I will ever trust iCloud for everything.
Yeah. Ooh,
anything.
One question. I mean, so a lot of us are watching it because we use a lot of Google Docs. And there was like, finally you can edit files and having them changing. But the one question that I had that I wasn't clear of, and maybe I just missed it, was whether it's possible for you to share these docs with anyone else. It looks like it's a very personal experience. You know, so you can edit something in Pages and then open it up in your iPad and then open it up in another computer, and you're editing it all, you know, at any one place. But can you have multiple people?
It's called file locking, and it's something that you have to solve if you're going to have cloud.
Right. I don't think that they've solved that
yet. I'm sure they don't do that.
Although the photo stream sharing is an indication that they're headed in that direction.
They're getting smarter about it. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's still the key thing that the Google Docs does that no one else does.
Speaking of sharing, I've been browsing around through the Mountain Lion pages on Apple's site, and they mentioned not only Facebook and Twitter sharing on Mountain Lion, but Flickr and Vimeo. Which I think is really great. I'm very happy to see that.
Yeah.
And there is a little tiny small print that says Facebook integration coming this fall. So Mountain Lion will come out next month for $20, but the Facebook integration may take a little longer. That sounds like they made that deal last night.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there were a lot of details.
We haven't quite got that in. And what will be on iCloud now? It'll be mail. It'll be contacts. It'll be calendar. It'll be messages. It'll be FaceTime, it'll be Game Center, it'll be Safari, it'll be Reminders, it'll be iTunes, it'll be the Mac App Store, and the notes. These will all use your Apple ID. That Apple ID gets more and more important all the time. And the documents will live in the cloud, too. As you mentioned, they've shown this before, but in Mountain Lion, you'll be able to edit on an iPad and Pages, and the edits will immediately be live on the MacBook.
Which has been desktop. That's been sorely missing for the Pages and Numbers.
That might be the way they handle that multiple user thing. If it makes those changes right away, well, it's saving them immediately.
It is, but the...
That's the difference, you know, but... Okay, so normally, like Dropbox,
you can do it all by
is file-oriented, right? So it uses the most recent file, and that's that. And if there is, in Dropbox, if there's a conflict, if you update it at the same time as I update it, we both try to save it, they'll make two files, and they'll say, this is the conflicting file, and there's two versions. This solves it a little bit because it's more granular. It's not file-focused. It's change-focused. And so then there's a race condition. You change it, and I change it. Whoever gets there first is going to win. If you get there the same time, is the only time there's a problem.
We don't know that.
We don't know that?
Could be file-based.
From
that demo that we saw, it could be file-based. We don't know.
I'm giving him more credit.
Because like with Google Docs, you can have three people editing the same application at the same time.
In real time. And those changes propagate, and there's no conflict.
And you see where everybody else is. Like you actually see everybody else's cursors. So you can sit there and see, I shouldn't go into that area because someone else is already working
on that. That's actually Google Wave. That's a few remnants left over from the late
extremely powerful
Wave. Yeah.
If you're in a meeting with three or four people of the in the same company talking to a client, on one document and just building all their notes of the meeting,
to be skeptical, Aaron, because I just assumed that that's what that's doing, but it doesn't have to.
I'm going
to
guess it's file based.
Read it again. Yep.
Because it's not letting other people edit it, it's assuming that there is only one person editing at the same time.
Okay.
So it's updating it, but that's my guess is that right now the way it's built,
it shows it like you're typing and then.
I know you're typing, but then you're going somewhere else and typing.
No. They showed, at least they didn't do it maybe this time, but they've showed it in the past. I'm typing on my iPad, and they show it live updating on the screen on the desktop.
Right.
So,
but with only one login.
I did not see that today.
He is skeptical. And they didn't show it today.
I saw them change an image.
They didn't show it today.
And it was pushed up to the cloud and sucked down. I don't know if it was a small change or if it was the whole file.
Okay. We talked about Sarah Lane has never been happy with iMessages. We talked about that in our keynote. Maybe they'll fix iMessages. They're certainly making a big deal about it. iMessages will now be running on all iOS devices and on all Mountain Lion devices. So you can start a message on your phone and then continue the conversation on your desktop.
And this is just really the continuation of the merger between the two operating systems.
I like it. I mean, if it really works.
This slow, drawn out.
You can send photos, HD videos, contacts, and attachments. So,
although it is going to be a little bit shocking the first time I get that message and my phone vibrates
and
my
your computer
iPad
notification center
and the computer.
You know that with Skype. Have you ever had that with Skype where suddenly everything goes off? You know,
I've had that happen. Yeah. Had that happen.
Well, I think I saw a note somewhere suggesting that it would be tied to a particular device. So if you've been texting on your phone and you haven't moved over to the other one, that only the alert will go off because. Yeah, I have an office full of this stuff, and you have seven devices all going bang, bang, bang. Bang, bang.
So they'll notify you on wherever you have typed last, but I could open iMessage on the desktop, and I'd see all the stuff there, and I could start typing there, and now it's going to notify you there.
Yeah, I'm not completely sure where I saw this. I may have been drunk when I imagined this.
I think because
it's a common problem. You know, people at Apple have multiple devices in their office, and they, too, have to think there's got to be a better way than having all six of these things go off at once.
Well, here, I mean, it says right here on the Apple site, something new is always popping up somewhere on your Mac. An email, a message, a software update, a calendar alert. Notification Center makes it easy to stay on top of it all. It's called Growl, folks.
Yes, the Growl people have been saying that for 10 years.
Jeez Louise. Simple ordered lists. You'll always know what's up. In fact, it even looks like Growl.
But, I think that...
Not really.
Well, the one image here, I'll show you the one image I'm looking at.
It's dark.
I have to say, as someone who's developed apps for, our company's developed apps for
Welcome
the Mac.
Welcome to life in the Apple
zone. Is that you know that if you're really, really successful, eventually you'll be crushed.
Yeah.
Sherlocked.
I'll be Sherlocked. I mean, I had a great green screen keyer on Final Cut, and now they have a great green screen keyer on Final Cut.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
it wasn't aimed at you.
No, it wasn't aimed at me. It was just, but it's still $30,000 a month of revenue that's no longer there.
That's gotta hurt. All right. They didn't talk about Gatekeeper at all, which I'm pretty excited about. Nor did they talk about the fact that June 1st sandboxing had begun on the App Store.
They didn't want to ruin the good feelings.
Yeah. Because they would have gotten a few boos maybe on something
guys,
like that.
Guys, $5 billion. Hey, remember when you loved us?
Yay. How do you feel about that, Aaron? Actually, let's take a break and find out.
Okay.
How about that? We're talking about the WWDC, the big conference going on right now for developers. Aaron Hillegass is in town. Actually, a lot of developers are in town. It's fun when WWDC is going on or Mac World Expo is going on because we get a lot of Mac folks in studio for Mac Break Weekly, and we've got quite a few here today. So we welcome you all and everybody at home watching the show. This portion of Mac Break Weekly brought to you by Audible.com. Audible's always been nicely integrated with the Mac. In fact, iTunes just understands Audible files, and there's no problem. You don't even need a special application. Although, I got to say, the Audible app on iOS is awesome. Your entire library is there. You can listen to any of the books. You can download them onto your device. It even has some gamification, so you can compare your listening hours to your friends, things like that. Go to audible.com. Browse around and take a look at all the books. Over 100,000 titles available in the best audio bookstore in the world. You know, Father's Day is coming up. What a great gift that would be for Dad is an audio book. Something like The Road, Cormac McCarthy's great book about a father and son traveling down. It's kind of grim, but
it's real grim.
Depends on whether you like your dad. Treat your favorite storyteller to the performances he'll love. They've got a special page. Giving Dad a gift.
Definitely not. I tell you, he is the king.
Did Dad read to you when you were a little kid? I know I did to my kids. Now you can treat Dad to an Audible subscription. Isn't that a nice idea? I think that would be a great gift. Or treat yourself. If you visit audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up for audible.com. And so many great books to choose from in every category. Fiction, nonfiction, history. Even self-help, sci-fi and fantasy, science and technology. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. You can sign up for that gold account. That's a book a month subscription, but the good news is the first month's free. First book is free, yours to keep. And you can cancel at any time, pay nothing, but still get that book, which is good. The new movie, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, is coming soon. You want to read the book before you see the movie because there's spoilers. I don't know. It's probably nothing in there that you couldn't guess. True Blood came back this week. Watched it last night on HBO. Have you read the Sookie Stackhouse novels? There's a bunch of them. It's a great series. And if you love True Blood, you'll love Sookie. Start with the first, Dead Until Dark. Sookie Stackhouse, Southern Vampire. I tell you, Audible's a great place. It's fun just to browse around. When people get together, Audible fans get together, one of the things we really love to do is say, hey, what are you reading? What's new? Will Wheaton has a new novel. He's reading a new novel from John Scalzi, Red Shirts, a novel with three codas. What are you listening to, Andy?
Oh, boy. I just heard about this yesterday, just bought it, and it's all I can do not to do nothing but listen to this. Imagine an audiobook, a staged reading of The Odd Couple with Dan Castellaneta and Nathan Lane as Felix and Oscar.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Okay.
Dan is a voice from The Simpsons, of course.
Exactly. Now, imagine that it's not just that one play, but 10 Neil Simon plays in staged readings, like by professional name brand actors like Richard Dreyfuss, Eric Stoltz, Laura Linney. Someone else was recommending, had a list of like really cool audiobooks. It's called the Neil Simon Collection, and it's all been produced by LA Theater Works. So it's 10 Neil Simon plays. I've only listened to like the first 20 minutes of The Odd Couple, and that's like it became one of those moments where, okay, this was definitely a good purchase. We're going to put this aside because WWDC is tomorrow and we have a lot of things to write between now and then.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to get
17 hours of Neil Simon plays. And also, if you're going to think of, if you're going to have one playwright that you want to, that's perfectly okay to hear him just as audio, not as stage plays. Neil Simon, he is like the master of dialogue, the master of patter.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, it's just absolutely perfect. So yeah, this is one of those words where even if I weren't like on subscription, I feel as though if I didn't have credits left, I'd be like, oh,
I gotta buy
it. I'm gonna spend $25 and buy it. I gotta have it.
I'm adding that to my wish list because that's gonna be on my next that's my next purchase. I noticed they do the same thing with George Bernard Shaw, Noel Coward, and Oscar Wilde. So Audible, there you go. It's more than just books. It's theater, too.
Culture.
Really is great.
Only you Culture. Don't have to turn off your phone.
I got to tell you, if you're not an Audible member, please go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up today. If you've got a flight coming up, if you've got a commute, if you just walk the dog or do the treadmill, you can read. And those times, normally you'd just be down times. You'd be walking along on the treadmill. Now you can be reading great literature or listening to great plays. audible.com/MacBreak. Yes, Aaron Hillegas. I see that you have gone
to preparing.
Red Sweater.
Yes, Daniel Jalkut has a great little company called Red Sweater, and he has a blog, and he's been dealing with the sandboxing a great deal.
He does Mars Edit, which is a fantastic blog editing tool that I use.
And he's just a great guy.
He
very
also
thoughtful.
Has a very nice little Apple Script tool that puts Apple Scripts in your menu bar that I really like. He sells that on the App Store. So he's aware of the issues of App Store versus selling direct.
Right.
What does he say?
So we actually just sandboxed one of our apps. We have a tool called eClicker, which is a student response system where you can put up a question and let users choose an answer, and you can see the results
in real
time. I've
used it. It's great. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, we just sandboxed it in preparation for the change in the Mac App Store, and it was fine. And overall, that's sort of what most of the developer community thinks, is that sandboxing is a good idea.
Right.
Because it gives users a very clear idea of what they're approving their app to do. And that's something you really want, right? Is the worst thing you can do is what ended up with Microsoft, where they were self-extracting .exe files, right? You train your users to double-click on an application to run it to install something. So the gatekeeper idea of being able to say, I'm installing this app. It wants to be able to talk to the network and the file system. Okay, I'm fine with that. That's
gatekeeper versus... how is sandboxing gatekeeper related?
Sandboxing is what you do at your end as a developer. You say, I am signing this application, and I am saying that it only wants these entitlements.
Okay.
And the gatekeeper is the interface to that. But where the user can say, I okay that app to do these entitlements.
And starting in Mountain Lion, you will, as a user, have three checkboxes in security. You can say, I will only be allowed to buy stuff in the App Store. I will only be allowed to buy apps with certs that have done what you just described, which is say, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and that's all. And then third, just wide open apps. Right? Is that
right? Because I believe that now it has to be sandboxed to be in the App Store.
To be in the App Store, you have to.
So that would only be two checkboxes.
I'm
not sure.
I think there is a middle ground where it's not in the App Store, but they have agreed to comply.
They've signed it.
Yeah.
What makes
In other words, you could do more. If you're selling in the App Store, there's things you just cannot do. Like you can't have a demo version.
Right.
So if you want to do that, you would sell it on your website. But if you wanted to assert security to your users, you'd say, but it is it does have a certificate. Yep. It is sandboxed.
The things that most developers are concerned about is that the entitlements are not fine-grained enough where you can say, I just need to talk to the network for this one reason or this one thing. It's a very sort of broad strokes, and it doesn't give the user a clear idea of what your app is doing. So that's Daniel's big concern.
Right.
The other concern is that some people are worried that that checkbox that you're talking about is going to push it so that now everybody has to sell everything through the App Store and pay their Apple tax for every purchase that happens.
That's a reasonable fear because I think that is where Apple wants to go, but I don't think they'll ever go there 100%.
I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to force anybody to do it other than the fact that people like me...
Culturally.
I mean, I know that if an application is not very expensive, especially if it's like a little application... Mm-hmm. If I don't see it in the App Store, I just kind of go, it has to be really unique.
I love
you know, like really special. Otherwise, I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
I won't buy it.
Really?
Yeah, because I just, it's just too much trouble. I got to pull out my credit card and stuff like that. You know, like I really am. And the other thing is that I open up a new computer. Like I buy my new.
So easy.
The biggest thing is that when I open up, like I bought a new computer today. When it shows up, I'm going to.
I'll log into the App Store.
I'm going to log into the App Store and just say install. Yep. You know, and I'm going to put all these apps back on. Mm-hmm. And then I will go through the hell of adding the other applications that I have to go add. You know, with all the weird little, where did I put that serial code? You know. And go through my database to find the right serial numbers. And, you know, I'm kind of over that.
What are your, Chris Breen, what are your readers saying about the iOSification of OS X? Do they welcome that? Because that's part of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, the old time users are afraid and they take it to the extreme where they say, well, Apple is going to lock us in and we're not going to be able to do anything anymore. You know, originally people were thinking, well, AppleScript won't work and Automator won't work. And they will. They're going to work fine. You know, again, the people who like to tinker with their stuff, and there are a lot of people who've been using Macs for a really long time and are like being able to get into the library folder and muck around with preference files and throw things around, they're concerned about it. I don't know that their concern is necessarily warranted much of the time. They look at the Pro apps and look at something like Final Cut Pro 10 and think, well, this is the direction. Look, they're really abandoning the Pros, even though there's some fabulous capabilities in these things, and so think that, well, maybe the Mac isn't for us anymore, and then if we want to do really high-end stuff, we're going to have to go somewhere else and do it. But I think those people who have come from the iOS as their initial experience have come to the Mac and go, oh, good, this is very much like what I've experienced before. So that Launchpad for them makes complete sense.
Right.
But to me, it seems like a completely stupid feature. Or the scrolling direction, which is a small thing for some people, but for old-time Mac users, it's a huge thing because they've been doing it for 25 years that way, and now they have to do it a different way. And, you know, when you've adopted this machine as your pet, to have somebody come in and change, you know, put the back legs on the front legs instead and put the tail on top of the head, it makes them unhappy because it's not the way it was before, and they don't want to change. They want things as they were. Which I think is one of the interesting numbers that came up today was where Apple was saying that 40% of people are on Lion. I thought that was a small number.
It seemed like generally, that, as they said, wow, 40%. But it is. It seems like it should be more. They made it easy and virtually, you know, $30 to upgrade
and
all
cheap.
Your machines. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would love to see the numbers Tiger versus Leopard or Leopard versus Snow Leopard, for example, compared to where we are now. They compared it to Windows, which is an easy target,
right?
But I would love to see the data on what the conversion was versions of OS X.
The Lion update has been hard. I mean, I updated my last computer over the weekend. It was a disaster to Lion.
Yeah.
It was a unmitigated disaster.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, by the way, if you have a software RAID on your Mac Pro and you go from Snow Leopard to Lion, it'll break the RAID.
Hmm.
If it's striped zero, then you got to talk to Disk Savers about getting that data back. Fortunately, you backed most of it up because we like to back things
good.
Up. But it's a big bummer.
That's not good.
So, yeah, it's. I think that Lion was a much larger update as far as the experience, and I think that I kind of resisted it and only did it very slowly, and there's a lot of compatibility issues with a lot of things as it moved forward. I think people who move slowly were probably smart. I did it like one computer at a time and just very slowly. I thought I had all figured it out until this weekend and then realized I hadn't thought of that.
And this makes me wonder why they even though that Mountain Lion will be out next month, they have new laptops today when they really could have put them out with Lion already on them and avoided this whole problem. I guess they were in a hurry to get the hardware out.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. Please, send it to me now. The keynote, by the way, is up now on the Apple site. You can watch it. I would broadcast it, but frankly, this warning terrifies me. So
we'll come to your house.
I guess.
Well, considering
you
already broadcast a bootleg version.
Well, I did what? No, I
nothing.
No,
nothing.
He open sourced it. That's all.
Oh, that's right. He was time shifting it from.
Yeah, but I hadn't read that warning at first. See, so I didn't know.
Oh, how could you know that?
How could I possibly know that they would assert such draconian rights to something that is, in fact, a public announcement?
But they want you to download their movie. and well, watch it I at the quality that they had planned.
I encourage everybody to do that exactly. So The Verge, I don't know how, maybe they went out and bought one, but they've got pictures of the new MacBook Pro. I guess you could you go to a store, Apple store, and get it right now?
Oh, they probably had a demo area, so they
No, this is in a box. This looks like they bought it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It could be at the stores.
I guess they may have been given one. Apple will do that with certain outlets, and I'm sure The Verge got one.
Yeah. I guess because The Verge would never do anything like rebroadcast Apple's keynote without prior permission. They get one.
Yeah. I think that's the warning they really should have put up. If you play any part of this keynote, we're not going to invite you to future keynotes. And, yeah, we're not going to send you anything for free.
This MagSafe looks very different, by the way. It's got a big metal thing around it.
Isn't it funny how the computers keep getting smaller? So they had to get rid of the Ethernet plug because it's too tall. And they had to get rid of the FireWire because it's too tall. Yeah. And eventually, only really skinny connectors will work.
I hope the IETF takes this and keeps this in mind.
That's part of my skepticism about this. I mean, what is exactly pro about this? At what point do you say, look, if you're going to take $2,500 from me, don't I get Ethernet? Don't I get more than a 256 gigabyte hard drive? I mean, this is it's nice, it's lovely, but man, I mean
they shouldn't call it pro. They should call it elite or.
As you call it, F and Extreme.
FX.
I mean, the thing is, it's got two Thunderbolts, two USB 3s. It's got, I mean, this thing is the most monstrous, with an HDMI out to
from
to boot.
A connectivity point of view, from it is.
But with SSDs and fast, I mean, that's all I got to say. I mean, I'll take the, this is the computer I've been waiting for my entire life.
See, here's the difference, Andy. You and I think about the cost. Alex does not.
I just think about how many cameras I can hook into it at one time.
No, I think Alex rapidly turning into the Scott Bourne of this show.
The thing is, so I want people to know is that I'm not buying these for myself personally.
Exactly.
Like it's not
your money.
It's a company that, you know, and these things generate. I'm not wealthy.
They generate
revenue.
That's right.
They are. This is not my home computer. I don't have a home computer. I just have I have my iPad. But this is stuff that is
no.
Working. They
we
pay themselves
like
off in weeks.
I
just wanted to say.
I just like to tease you. Although I have to say, whenever I wander by Pixel Core, there's always like seven or eight new boxes of new stuff. You have the best toy budget ever.
And we need a lot of toys.
Actually, this is a good moment for me to speak. You know, we do contract programming, so I have a whole team of nerds at home probably listening right now, and I want to say, no new laptop for you.
It doesn't make you more money. Hey, tell us a little bit about Big Nerd Ranch and your upcoming classes and so forth.
So,
Big
Nerd
Ranch.
Do
you only do them in Georgia? Do you ever do
them? No, we do them in Atlanta, but we also do them in Amsterdam. So next week we're doing an iOS course in Atlanta, and the week after that we'll do the same course in Amsterdam.
Fun.
Yeah, we have a great little place where you come and stay for the week. And
in Amsterdam?
We take care of everything, room and board, and we send you home again. So that's going on. I'll be at the Apple Store in San Francisco on Wednesday talking, and Boyz II Men are coming on after me, so you definitely want to be there.
It'll be busy.
Wow.
And we do contract programming, so we develop applications for people, both iOS, Android, and desktop. And if you want to learn desktop programming, we teach that as well. So if you want to learn Cocoa programming, we're doing a class in August. So
do you do any coding anymore, Andrew?
I do some coding. You know,
Aaron,
a company gets to a point where you have to do a lot of management stuff.
Yeah.
So how much coding do you do, though?
None.
Yeah.
But it's a hobby for me. It's not my business.
That's true.
And like you took the class, right?
I took the class. It was amazing.
And it's a fun hobby.
Really
it's the world's
great
best
class.
Hobby.
Yeah, it was a really great class, and I didn't take it with the intention that I would write code. I took it with the intention that I could talk to coders in a useful way.
Yeah.
Like, I understand how that structure works, so when I'm thinking about applications, which we're actually going to be most likely contracting through Big Nerd Ranch, that I can think about that structure so I can explain this is what I wanted to do, knowing what's possible and not possible. But there were people that were in the class that were definitely coding, and it's just a great it's a great class. I think that is the way to learn it. And I think sequestering yourself is different than buying a book. Sequestering yourself in a room, talking to someone who really knows what they're doing is much different than reading a book.
Well, so you need a space to experiment and somebody to kind of keep you on track.
Yep,
so
right.
that's a different experience than the book.
Yep.
With the book, I hope that you have that space and maybe someone to mentor you a little bit.
Yeah, no, I need the class.
Yeah, the class.
I'm coming
is
to
what
the class.
I'm just
Amsterdam,
too ADD.
Man.
And what's fun about coding, a lot of people don't realize, is all the little small victories.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people think they don't want to be coders. And then once you get into it,
it's so fun.
You do this little fix, and then it works, and you're like, oh.
Look at that button.
You get 20 little victories in a day.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas when your management, it's you get a victory every year or so.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a different feeling.
Long slog.
I mostly just fail all day, and then I get to the end and still it was okay.
Highly recommend Aaron's books. And, of course, you got to go to BigNerdRanch.com and find out more about their classes all over the world. It's so good to have you. Thank you for abandoning the keynote to be here.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you,
Leo. Really are grateful. Andy Nako, thank you for being here. So I take it the new MacBook is not in your not on your agenda, not on your list.
Not for purchase. No, I did buy a new MacBook last year, but it's definitely I'm expecting FedEx up the street any day now.
Oh, I'm jealous.
with something I can borrow.
How fun. Chris Breen, I imagine you'll be playing with it pretty soon too at MacWorld Magazine, MacWorld.com.
I expect I will. I may get one. I'm about 3 years out on a new Mac, so this one is tempting.
Yeah. And, I think if you get the Thunderbolt Cinema display on that thing, I can sell my Mac Pro for probably $300 or $400
and make a down payment.
$303 exactly.
That's a pretty shocking result, sir. That's it.
Just stab me in the gut. That's all I can
say. That's the point at which you suspend your presidential campaign and release your delegates.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Thank you for being here, Chris and Andy and Aaron. And thank you, Alex, for coming home just for this event. Are you hitting the road again soon?
Yeah, I'll be in. I'm hoping to check in from London next week.
Wow.
So I'm. I'll be there for next week.
But then, we hope to have you for next week.
Yeah.
And we thank you all for joining us. We did this a little early, so don't tune in tomorrow for Mac Break Weekly. Actually, what we did is we flip-flopped with Scott Wilkinson and Home Theater Geeks. Michael Fremmer will be his guest to be talking about audio. It should be a lot of fun. Home Theater Geeks, normally at this time, will be tomorrow on twit.tv. And we'll be back the following week, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, every Tuesday with Mac Break Weekly. Don't forget, coming up in about an hour, it's a little less now because we got out of here on time, TNT Tech News Today, and they'll have more about the keynote and more analysis and information as well. Thank you all for being here, and now it's time to get back to work. This break time is over. See you later.